swinging a fly ball, left center field. This one's trouble. Long run for Hill. Dives in. He made the catch. Wow. Derek Hill lays out in left center, flies through the air and takes an extra base hit and two runs away from the Blue Jays. Derek Hill playing a sensational center field, made his best catch.
I know everybody can probably hear that, but I can't play it on YouTube or else I'll get in trouble because YouTube's been, there's certain, I don't know how certain websites get away with playing clips of games and some other sites are, can and cannot do. But of course, that wasn't the big play of the day, obviously. This was the
1-1. Fly ball, right center. Deep, got a chance! 500!
We'll get to the minor league recap here in just a second, but it is the Tiger Minor League Report. It's Tiger Radio, Tiger Minor League Recap, as we're recapping over the week. Yeah, we're just recapping what happened in the minor leagues a little bit. I was on vacation until today, so all I have been doing since I got home is look at video and all that stuff. So I've been really just playing catch up a little bit, and literally was as soon as I got home, the Derek Hill catch happened. I'm like, all right, well, okay, cool. Maybe I'll sit back and unpack. No. Short time later, Miguel Cabrera hit the 500th home run. So, but hey, you know what? I'm happy because now it's the monkey's off his back. He can focus on getting to Eddie Murray, the former Lions kicker.
Eddie Murray, the baseball player, too.
Oh, yeah. Okay. For a second, I thought I said Eddie Murphy for some reason, but Eddie Murray, the also former Lions kicker.
Sorry. Put the banana on the tailpipe.
That happened. And then, yeah, so I just got back and I'll tell you what, Chris, anyone that goes to Michigan Adventures is a brave soul. That place is, before we get into the minor leagues, the Michigan Adventures is truly an adventure in sanitary and in what people should not wear in public, because I saw a lot of things that are just, it boggles my mind. Cloth being stretched beyond things. It's not even, I mean, you know, like, especially dudes, why are you wearing jeans at a water park?
You know, I remember once going to Cedar Point in jeans, possibly jean shorts, because it would have been like seventh, eighth grade, and that's what you wore back then. And then going down like Snake River Falls or whatever, and just being the itchiest person alive for the next 8 hours. But I don't know. To me, that's part of the fun of going to any amusement park, is just the people watching, where you've got, like, you'll see some missing eyeballs for some reason at a theme park. And you'll see those people wearing clothes they shouldn't, but also see like the family of eight that's all wearing the same thing. It's like you didn't realize that people like that still exist, but they do. And it's amazing. You know, they're driving home singing 99 bottles of beer on the wall.
We were that family because we my family and we made shirts that said Castillo Family Camping Trip. And I felt weird wearing that the entire time. However, that was the first time I took a vacation with my brothers and my sister since 1994, 95.
Oh, wow.
So it's been a long time since I've been with my vacation on my family. So it was good enough to get in the outdoors. I got to go on a raft and, pardon the Cuban jokes, but I actually floated on the raft. No problem. That's a bad thing to say. But
Cuban jokes. I got to go on a raft. It's good. I'm glad you got a break. I know we were still in touch a little bit because there was some rain and you know, just try to keep up with some things. But yeah, you definitely deserved. You work harder than just about anybody I know. So it's definitely stark when you're gone. And I'm like, I've got to choose one of eight things I could do that Roger's normally doing. Do I update? Am I tweeting out from Motor City Bengals? Am I tweeting videos? Am I writing stories? And the answer was, I'm just going to bed. For the most part. And, you know, it was funny though, is really, it was kind of an uneventful week for minor league stuff until basically today. There were a couple things, you know, we were down there on Tuesday in Toledo. We'll talk about that. And there were a couple things during the week, but really nothing big happened. And then, you know, the last 2 days, I was at my stepson's graduation party all day yesterday. And then today we had a birthday party. So I missed out. I missed on Riley Green's first home run, which is a bummer. But, you know, the Mudhens tweeted it out, and so we could just retweet that. But yeah, it your presence was missed, but I'm glad you got a chance to get out there and float around and have some fun with your family. That's a nice thing to do. It's something that people should do more often, about, you know, the family wearing all the same t-shirts, and it is kind of corny, but like, why should that be corny? Why should be, you know, spending time with your family and, you know, liking each other be corny? It's just kind of, I know everybody is, it's the cynical aspect of society. Everybody's afraid to tell each other that they love each other and, you know, be seen enjoying their family. That's wrong.
No, but you know what? You're absolutely right, because that's kind of where I was with it, because it seemed really corny, and I haven't been around kids that much since my son left the house. But, you know, at any rate, it was good to get out. And more importantly, just be able to get back, step away from baseball. I have a better appreciation of it. And so there's going to be one less thing I'm going to be carrying on my weight. So just for now, I'm going to be focusing on the Tiger Minor League Report, Motor City Bengals, and just kind of focusing on that in the podcast, kind of stepping away from Prospects Live, and just for reasons that are just clear. It's just, it's nice to have one less thing and go home and relax, and on top of your day job and all that stuff. So it's just, you know, especially because the Tiger Minor League system is in, we're jumping right into it. You saw Akil Baddoo hit the walk-off hit for Toledo. And he is rehabbing. He looks like he's probably joined the Tigers in St. Louis as their off day tomorrow. But before we get to the minor leagues, the biggest thing I took away from today's victory was the fact that you saw Joe Jimenez, who's been, again, kind of been beat up in terms of just his up and down season. He struck out one of the best hitters in all American League, Vladimir Jr., and froze him. And I thought the bullpen, all things considering, the Tigers only allowed 3 home runs to Toronto all weekend. 2 yesterday and 1 on Friday.
So, yeah, I mean, we did the show on Thursday, and we were joking. We looked at the Tigers' rotation heading into this weekend, and it was Tyler Alexander, Willie Peralta, and Drew Hutchison. And we're like, yeah, that sounds like wins. And, you know, but of course, it's baseball. So the Tigers' pitching was absolutely awesome all weekend. It was their offense that kind of let them down at all, but they came through and squeezed out 2 wins. And yeah, it was a really, really impressive series. And that was one of the things, I think you've said this, one of the coolest and most, I don't know, the thing that most typified Miguel Cabrera's home run is that it actually mattered. It wasn't some, you know, tack on run or when they were way down, like they needed that run. It tied the game, and it stayed really close till the end, until Marcus Semien made a very kind of silly error. But yeah, I mean, the pitching came through for him. Joe Jimenez has always had, you know, flashes of the stuff. It's just been the consistency, but that, it was cool to see him get that save. And it was cool to see Gregory Soto fight through, you know, he got himself into trouble again, but he was able to fight through it. And that's nice to see. So it was just a great series win, for, especially when you consider, what did they score? Like 8 runs total. And you win a series, that's not bad.
Yeah. No, and it's really one of those things, too, where let's go with Tyler Alexander's start on Friday. I was talking about this with Adam Dubin for Bless You Boys. And, again, the cutter usage, and we talked about this because I was just noticing that he went 7 innings, which is he threw a quality start, which, again, you don't know whether he's a starter or a swingman, but, you know, manager A.J. Hinch has said, you know, hey, if he can go out there and go to 6 innings, he's a starter. And they needed that, but we'll get back to a start in a second. But Saturday start by Peralta was really surprising because, again, I mean, out of the two between Hutchison and Peralta, Hutchison's one of those guys, and you saw it today. He only went through the lineup twice, so that was one of those things where they were like, okay, well, we know that he can get exposed on a third time out, and credit due where AJ Hinch managed that really well. But Peralta, I mean, he's gone out there 6 or 7 innings a couple times, and he's, I'm not gonna say he's a dude, but it's just he's a serviceable back end of a starter, and who would have expected that? I mean, we knew coming to spring training is one of, you know, James Chipman told us that he was throwing like 95, 96 down there, so the velocity was there, but was everything else? And we were talking to Dave Casper of Reviewing the Brew, was like, well, eventually the other shoe's gonna drop, but it hasn't yet.
Yeah, no, he's been a huge addition for them, just being able to go out there and give them quality innings. And that's what was kind of funny about this. And I know we've talked about Tyler Alexander before at times, but yeah, I was really impressed with his. He just, like, there are two things that I know that you're going to get from Tyler Alexander. He's going to throw strikes, and he's not going to back down from anybody. Like, I guess those are part of the same thing, but like, he doesn't seem to get rattled at all by anything, and he'll give up a bunch of home runs every now and then. But it kind of harkens back to like a Mike Maroth or Nate Robertson in his prime, where it was just like they were just going to come at you, and you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I also like that he changed, he shaved the goatee. It left a mustache, so before, where he looked like a leather daddy, now he looks kind of like an old West poker dealer, which I can handle. I think that's better than the leather daddy look. But yeah, so him stepping up has been amazing. And I mean, I think his season stats probably aren't all that different than Casey Mize. Honestly, like, I think his ERA is probably a little bit higher, but like strikeouts and walks and so forth. And Peralta, like you said, we went out and saw him in that Cleveland game, and that was, he got roughed up a little bit, but we saw him dance out of trouble three or four times because he has an out pitch, which helps. It's just, you know, mixing in enough fastballs and that kind of fringy slider to get to that split that is his out pitch.
You know, and that's one of the things that I took away from even from Drew Hutchinson today, I mean, who was saved by Derek Hill. It's one of those, I look at his stuff, and he doesn't really, comparatively speaking to Alexander or Peralta, you're not really sure where you're getting with Hutchinson outside of just trying to navigate his way through trouble. But it was, getting back to Alexander for a second, it was a cutter rate. His cutter has been increasingly being used. Last year you saw it, and it was at 17%, but it's already at 36%, and it's batters only hitting 220 against it in the XBA. I mean, that's pretty good, and all things considering that, as a put-away pitch, you're looking at it as like 22%. So he has a lot of six home runs on it, but that's a pitch that, again, based off his delivery, is going to eventually, if you make a mistake on it, he can get crushed out. Yeah. But, I mean, he's topping out at 90, 91 tops.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and how many times have we said this with Hinch and with Fetter? They don't mess around. They say, that cutter is your best pitch. Throw that much more often. Basically, like it's with Funkhauser with his sinker and his slider. He's throw those more often. Don't try to get cute. And don't try to, you know, work on your second, third, fourth best pitches. Throw your best pitches more often. And it makes sense. So, yeah, it's good to see. Like it does feel like we've always been told that Tyler Alexander is a swing man, you know, long reliever or whatever. But, boy, it's a lot of value you can get out of him if he can just continue to be a fifth starter. Even, and he looks like a fifth starter to me. I mean, it's a 4.5 ERA, something like that. That's perfectly acceptable if he's going to go 6-7 innings. That's great. So, I don't know. It was nice to see.
It was nice to see. And the bullpen again today, just doing what they had to do with Toronto. Like I said, Toronto's just such a good lineup. And so, but let's start with Toledo and really kind of, like I said, this is kind of probably a quick minor league recap. I just wanted to mention, I mean, the reason why we're doing the podcast, Miguel didn't hit that home run. We were planning on taking a week off, but you know, by the time Thursday, it's already going to be old news. And by then, they start a series in St. Louis on Tuesday. So
I just two game set, right?
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
I thought it would have been interesting if he had hit it because he hit his 400th, I think, in St. Louis. It would have been odd to hit 400 and 500 at the same park. But glad he got out of the way today.
Yeah, and what was interesting was one of the tweets of the afternoon. One of the social media posts I saw was first and foremost some Dickless troll said, oh, he still doesn't speak English. Well, no, screw that guy. But what do you expect? The most interesting one, though, was somebody said, like, it would have been nice to have the perspective of Ron Allen and Mario and Pemba because they've seen a lot of those home runs. And I thought about that. And that's actually a very good point. Whether you stand on those two, they did see a lot of the home runs, you know, but then, you know, I totally missed out what happened. I mean, you know, I missed out, man, on what happened on Thursday, but actually that's probably a good thing because that whole thing is just a mess with Jack Morris. But anyway.
Oh yeah. We did touch on that. Mm-hmm. Now, wait a minute. I'm trying to remember, was this the infamous second deck home run? That wasn't in Toronto, was it?
I don't remember. Maybe it was Toronto.
I'm looking. Here's the video. It's from Facebook. I don't want to start it if it's going to play down the line, but I thought,
Is that in Toronto or is that Oakland?
Yeah, it could have been. I don't know. I'm looking. So it was in September of 2016, they're saying. Minnesota Twins. All right. So. Okay. Second deck. Yeah, that's probably what Rod was thinking. But no, I mean, it would have been interesting to hear the perspective of anybody who's seen a lot of these. But I don't know. I'm sure everybody would agree that it was pretty damn cool. It's, you know, 500 home runs. You don't see that a lot. 28th time ever. So I don't know. I was it happened. I wasn't watching, unfortunately. I looked up and I said, oh, they tied the game. And what happened? It was like Cabrera hit a home run. I'm like, oh, he did it. So, yeah, I feel bad because I think we all wanted to be there when it happened. You were nice enough to take me down last Saturday, which happened to be their only win of the series, I think, or the weekend. We talked about that on the Thursday show.
Yeah, that was such an ugly series. And
it was a cool atmosphere, but also, like, it's hard to describe if people didn't go there, how strange it was every time Cabrera got to bat, because there would be so much cheering and then suddenly the air was sucked out of the place. Everybody was holding their breath and it was just not what you're used to. At a baseball game, normally you're used to people kind of not paying attention and still talking. So there's this dull roar, and it's suddenly it's like, you know, it's almost like a movie, you know, where that second, the slow motion where there's no sound before you hear the crack of the bat. That's kind of what it was like in real life. But
yeah, anyway. and seeing people on their edge of their seats, it's really nice too. It was nice to see that kind of atmosphere, and you know, it was one of those things where what I took away from that series too is how many people. And Miguel said it today. He was talking about he wanted to hit the home run there, but it was how quiet the ballpark was when he got up the bat. And that's not, he's not used to that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, it was cool to see. And we went on Fiesta Tigre, so it was cool to see when we went over there by Maz and Pete for a little bit. The people in front of us who were like, you know, Venezuelans, and they had the flag and the World Baseball Classic jersey on and stuff like that. It was nice to see people coming together to celebrate this great player. And hopefully, you know, people continue to celebrate. I mean, he's still signed for two more years. I don't think he's going to get to 600 home runs, but who knows what else he's going to do. I mean, we got 3,000 hits still coming, and I think I'm going to write an article tomorrow about what other milestones he can achieve before he hangs them up. But yeah, if we wanted, I mean, we did go down to Toledo. We saw the beginning of the Torkelson, Green, Kreidler, Toledo era. And yeah, that was pretty good game.
That was a pretty good game, and you know what? I'm sorry, Chris. Go ahead, because there's something I wanted to add about Kreidler here before you get to it. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to talk about, you know, it was an interesting week because they had a whole bunch of players rehabbing. We saw the Urania start, and then the next day was Matthew Boyd, his second down there. And just, you know, the new guys, how they did. It was about what you would expect. Riley Green went 7-for-24 with a triple, and he had a home run today. Monster game today, 5 RBIs, 2 walks and 10 strikeouts. He did seem to be, I don't know, it seemed like the velocity was just consistently a little bit harder in AAA, at least from these pitchers. And it seemed like a lot of fastballs were getting by him up in the zone or away. And then they struck him out later with a couple changeups low. But Riley Green, we've seen him adjust to just about everything before, so I have a feeling that he'll adjust to all that and be fine. Torkelson, you know, he was 4-for-25, had a double and a triple. We saw him spray the ball around the park a little bit. But it's just the thing, like, we try to warn people all year that this, he doesn't appear to be the 60-hit, 70-power guy that we were kind of promised, or that was, you know, he's supposed to be. It's probably a grade lower on both of those, which is still a very good player. But and he hit a lot of balls hard this week that kind of went right at guys. I think we get a double play at like 105. Jake clocked him off the bat. And he hit some balls at people. But 8 strikeouts, no walks. And one of the things that I saw this week was, and we've seen before, like, you know, if he gets hot, pitchers just kind of pitch around him. And he's not a guy who's really going to expand the zone unless he sees something really nasty. And he did get a little bit of that this week. I saw a couple, you know, really hard sliders down and away that he swung right through. But a lot of it just continues to be the issue I see with him is he misses a lot of hittable pitches, a lot of fastballs right in the zone, a lot of kind of hanging breaking balls, and he just swings right through them. So I don't know. I mean, maybe he just needs to get more consistent, but I'm not sure if that's quite there in him.
You know, you mentioned, I was watching a little bit of his game yesterday because you did the ultimate bases loaded tease thing, which was hilarious. Because I'm like, what happened? And then I saw it. I'm like, ooh.
Well, I think what people would know by now, like if it was a Torkelson Grand Slam, we'd just tweet out the video of the Grand Slam. I wouldn't take the whole time to set it up. But
you fooled me because then again, also where I was, the Wi-Fi was also kind of spotty. So I was kind of waiting for it. It was dragging along. But today I watched his Friday, a little bit of his Friday, Saturday, played appearance with a little bit of Friday. And it just seems like he is just one, in terms of a swing plane, seems like it's just kind of like, there's, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but just lacks a little bit of loft right now. Not the same loft we saw in Erie. Like we saw that sacrifice fly he hit, but it doesn't seem like the same kind of authoritative drive.
He does seem to be hitting a lot more liners and ground balls, which is actually something we saw in Erie too. He was hitting a lot more ground balls to third base than he had been in. I don't know. And we see, you know, after swings, he's always, you know, manipulating his arm, trying to get into that right angle. So I don't know. We've talked about it before. I still can't quite tell if he is just going to be that super streaky hitter. Like, we kind of think that's who he's going to be, is a guy who's just going to catch fire for a couple weeks, or if it just takes him a while to get caught up to speed and get going. Because he wasn't really tearing the cover off the ball in Erie. He had a good, like, opening week or two and then was just kind of hovering around 230. And then he had that 7-for-7 game and jumped up like 40 points. I don't know. We'll keep an eye on him. I mean, it is his first pro year. He made it to AAA. That's about all you can ask for. What's funny is Ryan Kreidler was just kind of the also him. Like, yeah, they're going to call up Green, call up Torkelson. And Kreidler just had a monster week. Like, we saw him hit a home run. What is his numbers here? I think 11 for 20, two doubles, two homers, three walks, and two strikeouts.
He's batting .550 right now with an OPS of over 1500. I've never, like, it's like some sort of Dragon Ball Z like number. He had two more hits today. He only struck out once.
Yeah, he looks like a MLB All-Star who's just rehabbing in AAA. Like, his swing is short and quick. He's spraying the ball. I mean, he's mostly pulling it, but he hit a home run to right center. He hit a home run to left center when we were there. He looks really impressive. I'd be shocked if he's not on the Baseball America hot sheet this week. And his defense was largely pretty solid. He did make an error today. It was kind of a tough, like, the bases were loaded and it was a ground ball kind of deep into the hole. And I think it bounced right. He's where the dirt meets the grass and took a rough hop on him. But largely, you know, for the most part, he's going to be a solid defender. So I don't know. It's tough to know there because he's been so good over the last month or so. You don't know if it's just a hot streak or if he's figured something out, but it's an impressive week for him.
Yeah, I mean, what I took away from what I saw from Kreidler is, again, this is something that I got asked earlier in the week if he was going to possibly make an appearance in September. I don't see that happening because this is his third level, technically. I mean, he went from low A in 2019. This is double A, and this is triple A. And you saw Lynn Henning get beat up on he's going to have, rightfully so, it was a preview. Our own Jake Bowes will be quoted tomorrow about Ryan Kreidler when you read it in the Detroit Free Press, or excuse me, Detroit News, and good for Jake, because Jake was with us on Tuesday as well. Almost like Henning was like, all right, guys, I got the water carried. Here we go. Kreidler's going to be the next big shortstop for the Tigers. And correct me if I'm wrong, I don't see them right now having more multiple shortstops. They're having a really good shortstop. And Kreidler, again, you have to kind of step back. And I got yelled at by somebody like, well, you guys should have had Kreidler bigger on your prospects list. First of all, that was done in mid-September or mid-July 2nd. And by then, he still was having a 30% strikeout rate in AA. And B, most importantly, the power, it was, I mean, I didn't expect this kind of power, but at the same time, guys, it's a list. It's subjective. If we're wrong, we're like, look, you might be listening to sports talk shows in Detroit where they never admit what they're wrong. I'm glad I'll admit when I'm wrong. If Kreidler goes up and hits 300, becomes the next Alan Trammell, then great. I mean, I think Kreidler is going to be a solid baseball player. But just calm down. Prospect lists don't matter. 5 years from now, if he's hitting 300 with 24 home runs, and you guys can go, remember when you had him at 10? No one's going to care. No one's going to care. If they do care, you can say, you know what? I was wrong.
Nobody. Listen, we were talking. I mean, he's been one of the biggest surprises in the system all year. Like, and at first we thought, like, all right, is this we talked about it for a while. Like, is this real or is this they just needed somebody to play shortstop at Double A? Because we talked before the show. He wasn't even on. We helped do the Prospects Live Tigers list.
Right.
It was me, you, Jake, and Chip. I don't think there was anybody else, right?
Yeah.
And I think it went like 55 deep or 45 deep or whatever. Kreidler wasn't even on it. We didn't have him on it because he hit 230 in Connecticut 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was like
he was overswing everything.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he's made a ton of progress this year. And even to get up to this level and to hit like he has is fantastic. I was always skeptical about his pure hitting ability. Like, he's over the season, he's proved that he's got above average raw power, certainly more than I expected. And we're kind of skeptical about his defensive ability, too, because he is not a super twitchy, quick athlete. He's an average runner. And he's a bigger guy, 6'4", like 210, I think. But he seems he's kind of got that California smoothness that they talk about with shortstops. They talk about it in prep shortstop prospects all the time. It's like Marcelo Meyer isn't a plus runner, but he's considered a potential plus defender at shortstop because he's just got the smooth actions and stuff like that. And that's kind of what you see with Kreidler. Listen, I don't think saying like, oh, he could be the shortstop of the future, that's whatever. That's fine. If he is, that's awesome. Doesn't mean you can't sign a shortstop and have Kreidler play third or trade him. You could trade him to if he's really that good, you can trade him and get something really good for him. So I know whatever his prospect ranking is, like you said, it doesn't matter. It's what we thought as a collective. We had six people vote and averaged it. So it wasn't like we got to move him up and down. We barely did any changes after that. We just had the collective people vote and then averaged it. So that he's on the top 20, I think, is impressive just on the own because he wasn't there before.
Yeah. I mean, I will say maybe we should give some credit to Dan Hasty because he was on the Road to Detroit podcast. And so it was funny because the other day when I was on the account, he was saying there is a quick name, the only major league team that has a podcast solely dedicated to the minor league system. I'm like, you kind of do too. And, we were joking around about it. But honestly, Dan does a really good job over there. And he had Kreidler on. So, maybe that's a good blessing in disguise. There you go.
He has a lot of good guests over there, but yeah, I actually really enjoyed the Kreidler interview. He sounded,
yes, I did like, as well.
He sounded like I don't know, like he graded Riley Green as a roommate, like in terms of cleanliness on the scouting scale, which I dug. He said he was a 50 out of 80. I was like, all right, well, so he's an average. So I don't know. He just seems like a kid who might be fun to talk to too. So maybe one of these days we'll. Good chance to chat him up.
Yeah, exactly. And again, I credit too. If you want to listen to us and then go listen to Dan, because they got the team sources and the credits to the Tigers PR department for handling that pretty well. And so Nathan Wangler, who, by the way, I did not know until you told me, he's related to John Wangler. That's his uncle. That's crazy.
I didn't know that until they said it on the pod. I had no idea. We could have figured it, but it's like Wangler. I don't know. It seems common enough. Like,
right.
But
then the other person I want to get to Toledo that maybe not be perhaps was like one of the lesser few names here, and we got a chance to see him pitch, was Miguel Pozo. And Chris, for what it's worth, he did not allow a single run this week. This week he had a pretty good week. He in four innings pitched, he struck out seven. Going back to August 11th against Columbus, and so. He's pitched very well. He also pitched this evening as well. So it goes back a little further, but he's been unhittable. One and two thirds innings today, one hit, four strikeouts, and rocking a 2.75 ERA. The Mud Hens bullpen has been through a lot. There's a lot of number, like there was a bullpen start today by Angel DeJesus. and the rotation has been kind of in flux because they've lost Hutchinson, they've lost Peralta.
And they've had to deal with rehabbing starters. So it's like, you're only getting two innings or one inning out of these guys. I haven't really zeroed in on Del Pozo, but it's nice to have those kind of lefty relievers that you can kind of rely on. I mean, we've seen Holland all year and seen Ian Kroll a couple times. It wouldn't shock me if we see Del Pozo again in September or, just if they need a lefty. I mean, we didn't talk about, I mean, this is mostly the minor league stuff, but Willie Peralta went to the IL and they brought up Alex Lang, who, I don't know, I hadn't followed Lang much lately, so I think we talked a couple of weeks ago that he was struggling. So maybe he pitched today, but I didn't see it again. So,
yeah, it just seems like there's for what it's worth. I mean, for the Tigers right now, in terms of if they have another injury to the rotation or bullpen, it's getting really thin. I mean, you're not going to see Joey Wentz this year. They're going to try to avoid Wentz as all possible, I would think, but I could be wrong.
I would think so too, although he had a decent start. But yeah, I mean, I don't think you'd expect much there. I don't know what they're going to do to replace Peralta now. Boy, it's tough. But I guess, maybe they'll just bring, I don't know if Boyd will be ready. I don't know. But there are a couple, Badu was down there. He didn't play the game we went to. He started the next day, and he actually had a rough couple games where he struck out a bunch. But by the end of the week, he's looking like he did always. I think he ended up like 2-for-14, but it was four walks and a double. And his walk-off hit today would have been, a three-run double, if not a three-run triple, depending on what part of the game it was. You know, it was a perfect gap shot with the bases loaded, but it was a tie game, so it didn't matter. So I think he's close and getting back to being in the Spark Club that they've had all season. And then Cody Clemens had another solid week.
He had three hits today. We saw him too on Tuesday.
That's right. Yeah. So he went 10-for-20 this week with a double, homer, two walks, six strikeouts. He's slugging .521 this year. Triple A aside, I think he's a lefty with power who can theoretically play at first, second, and in the outfield. I think we're going to see Cody Clemens a fair amount next year in the bigs.
Yeah. And Michael reminded us, Boyd and Urania will be coming back. But in terms of even like just,
because Boyd only pitched three innings, I think, in his last outing, and Urania is up to two now. So I don't know if they'll be quite ready, but maybe it won't matter. Maybe they'll just bring him up and have him do a handful of innings. I don't know what the other options are.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like I'm looking at, AJ Ladwig is not going to be not going to bring him up or anything like that. But that's true. He does 2 days off this week does help. So. Thank you, Michael. You're absolutely right. The off days are such a critical thing. And they're off tomorrow before they go to St. Louis, and then they're off on Thursday because it's a weird two-game series. So in August, it's been hot. It was 92 today in Michigan, and I can't imagine. And it was
gross. Hot time.
Yeah, it was gross. It's gross everywhere you go. It felt like tap water.
All the windows in our basement, like, fogged up. From the AC in here and the heat outside, like it was just that kind of steam heat out there that was causing condensation.
No, but, it was. It reminds me of the Family Guy, the condensation. Oh, never mind. I'm just random reference, but no, it was insane in our cabin. Our cabin's all wood, so it was just like we had a fan going, and then we had a ceiling fan going, and we took a shower right before the old school.
Yeah.
We have no air conditioning, but speaking of all things hot. That was a bad segue.
I think it works for me as long as you're actually talking about something that was hot.
Well, John Lester. John Lester was pretty tearing up Toledo before he got sent back down with Yarno Gonzalez, as those two switched or those two were sent down the Erie, and they lost a tough one today, 5-2. The offense, like we talked about, you guys talked about this on Thursday a little bit. All those bats are gone. Eric De La Rosa got a double. I saw he had his first home run, which is awesome. But the offense is going to be hard to come by. And also, who retired in Erie was Cole Peterson, who voluntarily retired.
Yeah, that was a bummer to see. I think the writing, was kind of on the wall when they sent him down. He just wasn't playing much, really. And they sent him down when they brought up Kreidler and those guys. And I think for him, it was like, all right, I understand what's going on here. So sad to see him go. Great defender, but just, in the wrong era for his skill set, I think. unfortunately. If he played the 80s, he'd probably have been up in the majors. But, it's just a bummer in the Erie right now. They were 1-5 this week against Richmond. They're now 9.5 games back of first place. And they just don't have offense. Like you said, they scored under 3 runs a game this week. De La Rosa hit a home run. Andrew Navigato hit his first double-A home run. But really, yeah, they're kind of relying on the old Wiley vets, Josh Lester and Dylan Rosa and Drew Ward and guys like that. And it's just, there's just not a ton there. But, you know, they've got kind of a sneaky, interesting pitching staff now.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus Rodriguez got rocked up again on Saturday night as they lost 14-4. That was a game that I tuned in just for a little bit today, and I was trying to look at their bullpen, maybe to see if anything involved with improvements with Ruben Garcia or anything like that. And it just, no.
Yeah. But so Reese Olson made his debut, and it was a tough one for him. He struggled with his control all game.
Friday night that he debuted?
I believe so. Yes. 4 innings. Only gave up 4 hits and 1 earned run, but he walked 4 and only 1 strikeout. So he was just kind of dancing in and out of trouble. But he gutted out 4 innings for him, which is nice. And then they got a solid start from Wentz. We talked about him. 4 2/3, 3 hits, only 1 earned run, 6 strikeouts. And Bo Brisky keeps doing his thing, man. 5 innings, 3 hits. It was 2 earned runs, but only 1 walk and 8 strikeouts in 5 innings. Like, if you can do that at Double A, you're getting awfully close to being very interesting. You know what I mean?
Definitely. And in Richmond, in the San Francisco, that's the San Francisco Giants affiliate. They have some pretty good prospects over there. It's no slouch either. The Flying Squirrels have some guys. So it's good to see that, especially making that adjustment so quickly. And you look at what Erie's got to work with in terms of like TBA for pitching wise. It's been, you know, who's going to be starting. And it's almost like what's going on with Toledo too. But the one thing I will say, the one certainty that's been going on has been West Michigan's rotation a little bit. They're seeing whether it's Adam Wolf, who we'll get to here in a second, or it just seems like the rotation, the offense is a different story, but the rotation seems to be settling in nicely for the Whitecaps.
Yeah. Now you mentioned Wolf. I think he had 2 solid starts this year, this week. It was a couple weeks ago. I watched one of his starts and I was like, you know, it kind of reminds me of Tyler Alexander. Like maybe a poor man's Tyler Alexander, as it were. I don't know if he's getting up into the low 90s or not, but it's a cutter heavy lefty with like a 4 or 5 pitch mix, and he's just keeping guys off balance. And so, yeah, I don't know. What did he do this week? I'm looking.
He pitched today and he had a solid 9
strikeouts.
He had, that was Brendan White, which we'll get to in a second.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
That's West Michigan lost 2-0 to Fort Wayne. Wolf, 5 innings, 1 hit, 1 run, 5 hits, 1 run, 7 strikeouts for him, no walks. And the bullpen, again, Angel Reyes has done a pretty good job lately, and they held their own. But Saturday's game, Chris, that's where I wanted to get to with that, because that was one of those box scores I was watching from camp. And
yeah.
Brendan White, 5 innings, 4 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts. And Brian Tassin, you guys mentioned him last week on Thursday, and he pitched out of the bullpen 4 innings, 1 hit, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. 6
games, yeah. I don't even know if we saw Bryce Tassin when we were out there or not. I think we may have seen him once.
No, that's a guy that's on our list to see, because I know if we're going to go to Lansing this week, that's a guy hopefully they'll bring out. I'm ready to go to multiple games if I have to see this guy.
Yeah. Brendan White, it's kind of funny because I think Brendan White was the 26th round pick in 2019, and Bo Brisky was the 27th round pick, and they've both been kind of mildly intriguing starters all year. And White was a guy we thought was a bullpen arm, and I do think if he is going to go to higher levels, he probably is a bullpen guy. But to get that level of performance and guys who at least have some interesting pitches, with Brisky, you're talking about the changeup, with White, you're talking about the slider. That's a pretty good deal in the late 20 rounds. And of course, those players will no longer exist in the future, which kind of sucks. But and Austin Bergner had a good start. Talk about another reliever that's been converted into a starter this year. It's kind of interesting the way they've done that, where they've just like, you were supposed to be a reliever, but we need starters. So here, let's see what happens. And they've been doing a good job with it. You know, I'm a little bit skeptical that White and Bergner could keep it going as a starter at Double A. But getting these innings now can only help them if they do move to the bullpen in the future, you know?
Yeah, especially because, I mean, you look at the West Michigan in terms of what they've been able to, in terms of like starter wise, Reese Olson was the first one that went the longest start of the year. And so we've been seeing a lot of like five inning starts from them. And again, you have credit where Brian Peña is due for bullpen work. I mean, we saw once the last game we went to West Michigan, Zach has pitched three innings out of necessity because the bullpen's been kind of just, they've been piecemealing together between that and Erie. And you can even say that to a certain extent for Lakeland, because anybody from Lakeland that's good is automatically get a pretty much, I'm not going to say automatic, but pretty good opportunity to move up pretty quickly. And so, you know, there's nobody at Lakeland that, from what Chip's told us, from anybody else has told us, that stands out so far as, hey, man, wait till this guy gets to the next level.
Well, we did see Jack O'Loughlin come up. He had had a couple good outings, and that was an ugly start for him, unfortunately. I think he got one out, walked three or four, gave up a hit, and that was it for him. They brought in Zach Shepard to do, you know, long relief. So that sucks to see a guy come up to his new level and just struggle like that. But I don't know, you know, maybe it was a good lesson for him, like, oh, this is what I can do, this is what I can't. But I don't know, the offense has been a little bit light down there ever since Torque and Dingler left, basically Lipsius before them. But Gage Workman finally seems to be heating up a little bit. He had a really solid week. I think four doubles, four walks to four strikeouts, 8 for 21 overall. That's kind of what you hope to see from him. And Cooper Johnson was hitting a little bit, and that's all we want him to do is just hit a little bit. I think he had a handful of doubles and some walks too. And yeah, because that's a guy with a big league glove. Just, you know, hit above your weight as you make your way up the majors, and you've got a chance to play. So that was good to see. And Winsel Perez, like, I think we've all kind of moved on from him as a prospect, but he had a solid week. I think he had like 8 or 9 hits. But yeah, in general, you know, just Daniel Cabrera still isn't providing the level of offense that they had hoped from him. I think he's only at 235 this year, something like that. And I don't know. They need some reinforcements down there, but there's not really anybody. There is one player in Lakeland, maybe two, that could come up and help, but I don't know. We'll see about that.
Yeah, I mean, there would be – love to have Cole Keith. We'll talk about Lakeland here in a second, but in terms of what you're referring to, Gage Winfrey, you are correct, Chris. There was only – outside of the game he had on Thursday, he had hits in every single game. He had a multiple hit game on Friday and Saturday, which had one hit today, and he's batting 229 for the month. Again, that doesn't sound like a lot, but considering that where he's coming from just over a month ago in Lakeland, you know – I think
he was like 170 for a while there in his first few, lots of strikeouts. So like, I don't know. It's just, it was encouraging for me to see him get the bat on the ball more. And, you know, it's four strikeouts in a week is good for him, and have as many walks is also good. So I just, you know, the small things, and it could just be like a hot stretch where he's seeing the ball well, or maybe he's making adjustments, and we hope to see the latter.
And, you know, another person I'm really interested in seeing is the University of Creighton Blue Jay, Jake Holton, which is, it sounds like a David Chad special, because that's right in his wheelhouse, and which is nothing wrong with that whatsoever. It's just a statement, because the Tigers tend to draft quite a bit of players from there. And he just got called up in for this series. He just started this week with West Michigan after hitting 261 in Lakeland, and he's off to a pretty decent start. So For West Michigan, he's batting 333 with just four walks and eight strikeouts. So he's kind of half a balance, at least healthy balance, a small sample size. But down in Lakeland, he was, I don't know, Chris, he's not much of a power bat, right? I mean, in terms of.
I think he was kind of, he's a first baseman. You kind of hope that he's got some pop. And I feel like he did hit some home runs in college, but I don't know if we've seen a ton. In pro ball, he might just be more of kind of a gap hitter, which is why he wasn't drafted higher. Basically, like, oh, this is a first baseman. He can hit a little bit, but the power is not there. But we'll see. Yeah, I mean, he's certainly been an interesting bat in the middle of the order there to get on base. And he seemed like every time I was checking a clip, he was either at bat or on base when they were scoring. So, yeah, it's a nice boon to the offense there, I think.
Yeah, and for what it's worth too, I mean, what we've seen from Spencer Torkelson, Ray Rivera at first base. Again, just a nice, it seems like a good org soldier, but for now, hopefully we'll see a little more of him. So what's going on in Lakeland, Chris? That's the one team, admittedly, I did not have a chance to do any prep on. I did a little bit of prep, but not too much.
Yeah. Well, it's the same old down there. They went 2-4 this week. They were playing at Jupiter, who used to be the Hammerheads. I don't know if that's what they're still named now, but
they're still the Hammerheads. They're Miami, the Marlins affiliate.
But they're in last place. They're 26 games out of first. It's that much. You got Ben Malgeri or Malgeri. I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce his name. He was their 18th round pick this year from Northeastern, who's, he's this year's version of the college outfielder, who's too good for the level, but there's not really anywhere to put him. So it's kind of like the Kerry Carpenter from a couple years back, who, did he win the Triple Crown, or he made an all-star game, a team or whatever for the Complex League, or back then it was the Gulf Coast League, but he had no business being there, but there was just no room. But anyway, he went 11 for 26 this week with a double and a triple. And then it's, ho-hum Colt Keith, another 300 a week, just 6 for 20 with a double, a triple, 5 walks, 7 strikeouts. Got to cut those out. But and he's just even when I'm checking and like the game day when he makes outs, it's like Colt Keith flies out sharply to center field. And I'm like, I picture that in my head. And I'm like, he probably stroked that and it just went right to him. So, I mean, he's a guy who he makes a ton of hard contact. He walks. The power is still, more gap than over the fence. But as I don't know, like in private chats, you'd be like, I will take that every day over the kid who. And we could talk about some of the kids down in the Complex League who've got, 7 home runs, but they've got 35 strikeouts and 5 walks. It's like, give me the kid who can hit and knows how to put the bat on the ball and could, doesn't swing out of the zone. And eventually we could teach him to hit for power. And even if he doesn't hit for a ton of power, you can still have like a Michael Brantley level doubles machine who is giving you a ton of value. So I remain excited about Colt Keith, even though I still haven't gotten eyes on him. That's why we're kind of hoping here, final couple of weeks, just give him he's always wanted to see Lansing, Michigan, I think.
I mean, tomorrow, they usually do the roster announcements tomorrow, so we'll see what happens, and maybe we'll get something from one of our quote-unquote sources. And so Josh Crouch and Chris Myers, who were part of the draft class, Myers is not off to a good start at Lakeland right now. He's batting less than 100, like maybe –
Yeah, I think he was like 0.53 the other day when I checked. But Crouch had a good week. He was also 6 for 20. I was looking at Kingston Liniac when I would check the box scores, seemed to be doing things. But I think he basically had a couple real big games. But he's still, I don't know, it's just he's an interesting one because he's got those tools. It's very, we often compare him to Parker Meadows because they were in the same draft class and both center fielders. But I'm looking at Liniac. He's it's just about the hit tool with him, man, because he's got, so let me check his season line. He's only hitting 190 this year, but he's got 10 home runs and 15 steals. It's like, and he could play a legit center field. And you're like, oh man, you got power and speed and you can play center field, but 104 strikeouts, 33 walks in 87 games, just not enough hits, unfortunately. So maybe let come. He's still what? 21. Let me check his age.
He's 21 or 22.
I thought it was maybe. He was born 11/11/99, so he will be 22 this November.
Okay.
So.
And then the other one, there's another guy who I hope we can maybe see in Lakeland next year or possibly West Michigan's Carlos Pena. Not that Carlos Pena, the
pitcher?
Pitcher who started today for Lakeland, who was actually in rookie ball until recently, and then he's been just got promoted over to Lakeland because Lakeland needs some pitchers, but there's some of those international pitchers that we still haven't really gotten eyes on that I would like to see. Hopefully we can get some intel on, because I look at guys like De La Cruz, who's been with the system, Israel De La Cruz has been here for a while. He's going to be 25.
Yeah, he used to be a shortstop.
Yeah, he used to be a shortstop. He's 24. He's going to be 25 next June. And, you kind of wonder, he's been starting to pitch. I believe this is his first year pitching, correct?
I think he pitched back in 19 as well.
Okay.
But, he's a conversion project. But, and I remember watching, he pitched in one of those games in Bradenton where, the few games where you could see on the app. And he was like 89, 90. And I was like, this is nothing special. And then he struck out like the next 6 batters. I was like, all right. Okay, then. I don't know what to say about that, but yeah, no, there are a couple interesting pitchers down there in Lakeland that you kind of just, we just kind of have to look at the data. You know, that's all we have from, you go to minor league splits or whatever, but it doesn't, there's not a whole lot of data that jumps out from these dudes. Like, it's just a lot of like 91 to 93 with ho-hum spin rates. And so I don't know. It's been a strange couple of years for the Tigers in terms of low level pitching development. And, you know, we haven't heard anything more about Jackson Job suiting up this year. So I'm just kind of assuming that it's not going to happen until Instruction League, because what do we have, 2 weeks of the season left?
No, we have another month, because remember, the minor league season got extended till.
Well, I know they did. They did for the AAA.
Oh,
I feel like I could check their schedule real quick, but like, I don't even know if they have the Florida Complex League schedule, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he'll pop up. I was kind of hoping we'd get like 5-6 starts, but I don't know. I think it's just they're going to shut it down for the year. But I don't know. They do have. They do have the Rainer Castillo kid down in the Dominican, who's interesting. And there are a couple other names you see will occasionally like, oh, he'll pitch four innings and have like 7 strikeouts. You're like, well, that's interesting, but I have no idea what it looks like. So,
yeah,
it's just tough. It's tough to know down there. It's
well, as far as Lakeland goes, the season does go till mid-September. It looks like mid-September. Right now, I'm looking at it right now. They're playing. Yeah, they're. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I wouldn't expect.
For everybody to start in there. No, I see what you're saying. God, yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, okay, yeah, no, right.
But I haven't checked the Florida Complex League to see what their schedule is like. So it could be the same. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because for as much as, you know, moving the low A team. So Michael, yeah, Meyer gives us FCL goes to September 19th. So we're talking
things are
another 4 weeks, yeah, 3 weeks.
So I mean, is it really going to be advantageous for those guys to start pitching now?
I mean, I guess that was the main issue, was like, is it worth it to ramp Joe back up? I would love to see him get out there just for a handful of innings, just 2 starts, just to get him a little bit of a taste. But I don't know what's happening behind the scenes. So maybe we'll find that out tomorrow. Maybe we won't see it at all. But
you know, we did get a taste of, by the way, is Marcel Meyer.
Oh,
who was in MLB's prospects as one of the top.
He get a home run. He got his first home run, didn't he?
Yeah, he's already like being declared one of the best prospects out there. And a lot of Tiger fans were already just like, whoa, it could have been, we could have had 3. And I thought that was kind of like, really? I
mean, yeah, well,
you don't want to sign, you know, here, I mean, you want to sign here, whatever rumor or whatever that's going on out there.
We could, yeah, I mean, that's just basically MLB pipeline. They had him as their number one prospect. And so they said, well, if we're going to do an update, where would he fit for us? And it's based on very little pro data so far. He'll start there next year, and we'll see by the end of next year if he still warrants that. And we'll see if Job warrants being on the top 100 at all or what. I mean, it's, you don't really know until these guys get out there. So, you know, ranking recently drafted guys is always kind of like, yeah, this is what I think. But as we've seen, like, you know, Ryan Kreidler out of nowhere after a couple of years, it's, I don't, you know, I look at, who's the Shane McClanahan, the left-handed pitcher, from 2018, the Rays drafted like 30th overall or in the supplemental round. He was briefly that year talked about going 1-1 as a lefty with, you know, great stuff. And it was eventually Casey Mize. But you look at his stats now in the pros, and they're better than Mize and they're better than Scooble. And it's like, so how much of this is talent coming right out of the draft, and how much of this is actually real development in the minor league system? So I don't know, prospect rankings, whatever. Get back to me in a year.
Yeah, like, but I said, if we're off, we're off. And or anybody's for that matter. It's one of those things you have to kind of look at, okay, how many people are going to the games and those kind of live data. But speaking of live data, the one thing about the complex league that I'm kind of miffed about is Nick Quintana is batting under 100.
You know, I don't know. We've heard many times that he's had some sort of wrist injury, because he was really hot for like 3 weeks, maybe even a month.
In July?
I mean, he was hitting the ball and hitting, walking and hitting for power, and then he got hurt again or was gone again. And it's like, and again, like, he's a and it he's damn near 24 years old now, I think, and basically in rookie ball rehabbing, and even him being in low A wasn't a great sign, but it does feel a little bit like it's just hard to know if he's ever been healthy. But yeah, the numbers have never looked great, and it's tough to see. But then, you know, you see, I don't know, we saw Isaac Pacheco, their second rounder this year, get off to a really hot start, but he's got like, you know, 12 strikeouts in his last four games or something like that. He's it was my main concern about him coming out. I didn't like his swing, and I hope that, you know, I mean, they know much better than I do, but I just worry that it's another situation where he's going to be like a, I said the other day, like a Parker Meadows or Ray Rivera guy who needs a swing change, and the organization is ill-equipped to get him to do it, or you know, get it to stick. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just making way too much of a high schooler in his first pro ball in playing in 1,000-degree heat, although he's from Texas, so whatever.
Yeah, the Compost, by the way, Saturday was 2-for-4. I wish we had more kind of camera, some sort of camera. And then Carlos Dahlgren was also 2-for-4 on Saturday. I wish we had some more data on those guys. I mean, just to see some visual confirmation of, I mean, we've gotten some from the, there's a little bit of camera action on Campos, but there hasn't been too much on anybody else.
So that would be nice. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Campos and Manny Sequeira, they both have 7 home runs this year. They were both from that 2019 international signing class. We everybody talked about Campos because he was like kind of this man of mystery, but so nobody paid attention to Sequeira, who, I mean, he's one of those guys that I talked about earlier. Like, you know, he's hitting for a ton of power down, let's see, 4 home runs and 5 doubles in his last 8 games down in the complex league, but it's 2 walks and 8 strikeouts. I mean, I take that ratio, but you got to keep hitting for that power to make the walks and strikeouts work. So I don't know. Yeah, it's difficult to know anything about these guys. And that's one of the things I was going to get into is for as logical as it seems to have low A ball be down by the, you know, the team's spring training complex and thereby the complex league, it's weird now because we don't, like it used to be, they'd be in the rookie leagues, and then we'd get a look at them in West Michigan before they head back to obscurity in Lakeland. And now they kind of stay in obscurity for a couple of years. And so we don't really know what to expect when these guys are coming up to West Michigan now. I don't know, it's just tough without getting down there. And I'd like to go down there, but I don't really like Florida. I don't really like the weather. And in the baseball, it's not great at that level. So.
No, and it's, but like, is, as I've been told many times, it's a good opportunity to really check out your evaluation chops and kind of go from there. Because one of the things that going down there for the first time, you're right, it is incredibly insanely hot. I mean, I went down there in May and it was already hot. It was like 54 degrees here in Michigan. I got down there and I got sick because of the temperature change when I got back. It was like 90 degrees and just, you know, sun bearing on my head. And then I got back to West Michigan, that series, and it was cold and windy and all that. But no, it's a good barometer to go down there, and hopefully we'll have enough time or springtime to go down there and check it out and get some good eyes down there and get some really good video. Because, you know, low A right now, they just go right to low A, and apparently it's MLB's mission to televise every single minor league affiliate, and I hope that happens, because I think it just gives us an opportunity to, there was a camera out there, and we saw Campos' home run on Twitter, so there's some sort of camera. Maybe they're working on it right now, I'm not sure, but
yeah, I don't really know what the holdup there is, but I'm sure it's a fair amount of work to put all the cameras in. But I don't know, it's been going on at the rest of the minor leagues for like 5-6 years now.
We did get a question about our favorite Miguel Cabrera.
Oh, that's right.
Moment, and I would have to say, Chris, go ahead. I'm still kind of debating between two of them.
Yeah, I mean, I have kind of a lot of them. I think. The one that sticks out most in my mind is his battle with Mariano Rivera. It was like, you know, the 8-minute battle where he fouled like 3 pitches off his foot and was like, and I think it was a huge home run to tie the game or give him the lead in New York. And it was just, you know, Rivera wasn't prime Rivera, but he was never really not prime Rivera. You know what I mean? He was always good even up to the end. So that was just really cool to see these two incredible Hall of Fame players going against each other and see Miggy come out on top. And then beyond that, it's just a bunch of like, like walk off home run, walk off hits that kind of jumped to my mind.
You know, one of the things that for me watching Miguel, a person with this kind of magnitude in a Tigers uniform, of course, we saw today that we've been seeing how many home runs he would not have if he wasn't at Comerica. He'd be at 600 or injuries slowed him down and all those things. But to me, it's not necessarily a moment. It's this stat right here that he is part of a class that has players with 500 home runs and 300 batting average. That is, to me, the most single impressive thing I've ever seen a Tiger hitter witness. Because, I mean, you can add all those moments together. And I'm not trying to cop out of the question because it's a good one. And Joe Dexter is a really good dude, and he's always sending us good questions. But the reason why you were just saying earlier, so many good choices. That Mario Rivera home run does stand out because he never gets – I mean, he was untouchable with just two pitches. But when you're in a class with Willie Mays, Ted Williams, Jimmy Fox, Frank Thomas, Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, and Mel Ott, and, of course, Manny Ramirez, but that's also – I mean, that's subject to be questioned with. But still, nevertheless, that's a pretty elite category right there. That's elite group. So, to me, I would have to go probably – I would have to go with that over it's just because there's so many choices and honestly, like so many clutch moments he's had. And, but that stat right there, that's just something you don't have another. There's no other, like you think about those teams too. Babe Ruth was a Yankee, Foxworth was the Cubs, I believe. So Frank Thomas, White Sox, Mel Ott was with the New York Giants before they moved to San Francisco. Ted Williams, of course, Boston, Willie Mays with the Giants, both in New York and San Francisco. To have a team like the Tigers on there is really cool for all the talent they've had. I mean, you know, Kaline was a very good hitter, but wasn't much of a, you know, wasn't the power guy. He's the all-time leader in the Tigers home runs with 398, and Miguel's right after him. So to see him in that kind of category, I don't know, just to, knowing full well he's going to have the Tiger uniform, that's just cool to me.
Yeah, what's kind of wild is that, you know, Pujols was there for a while, but he hit for such a low average for so long that he's now a 297 career hitter. And Miggy's still at 311, I think, or you say 309?
309.
And that's with, like, the last four seasons where he has not hit well. He's hitting, like, 250 of the last four seasons. It's still well above 300. I don't know what he would have to do to dip under 300 over the next 2 years, but, no, it's a remarkable achievement to see. He's been one of the best hitters of all time, just a gifted hitter who also happened to be incredibly strong and could hit home runs to every part of the field. That's when I looked at his, I did a story. He leads baseball, with the most opposite field home runs since they started tracking that, like on Fangraphs or I think I looked on Statcast. So, and that goes back to like the 92, I think, or 88 or something like that. He's up there with Jim Thome and more than A-Rod in terms of guys who went opposite field. So it's just a tremendous hitter. And I don't know. Like I did that story about his, you know, memorable moments, and some of them were home runs, but Beck had beaten me to all the home runs. So I had to come up with some of my own. I saw him hit that home run in 2012 ALCS. That was a huge one. His home run, one of the games I was at, the great, I think it was 2012. Was that the first year they had Prince Fielder? I think so.
That's right.
It was a great game. I think it was 2012, but maybe it was 20. Yeah, it was a great game that I remember because Alex Avila hit a walk-off home run, but it was kind of like a classic. The Tigers were down by three runs and I don't remember. It was like Brendan Bosch got on and Austin Jackson got on and Cabrera hit a game tying three run homer. And like everybody knew it was going to happen and he just did it. We're like, yep. Okay. So I don't know. He just, you know, he was so good for so long and had so much fun on the field. I always love it when I see him talking to fans. He seems like they're having real conversations. Like, what the hell are you talking to Miguel Cabrera about? Like you're sitting.
Well, what's your stock? What's your stock game?
Yeah. Like? I don't know, but he seems to be getting doing it. So I don't know. He's been a joy to watch. And I'm glad that everybody's having fun with it.
And to correct my mistake, he's actually third of all time with home runs behind. Kaline's at 399 and Norm Cash is 373. So my apologies. I just want to make sure I get that corrected.
Third in Tigers history?
Tigers history, yep. Yeah. And so Yeah, you wonder what it would have been if he didn't wasn't injured. What could have been? But I mean, honestly, a triple crown in this era. Yeah. I mean, come, if you think about it, the last time I was done was 1967
with the Harlem. So.
Yeah, Yastrzemski.
Yastrzemski, and then Frank Robinson. Was it the same year or was 1 year before? Or after?
Yeah, I think it was 1 year before. That. Like, but either way, that is quite an accomplishment. And you look at it's like I said, just all the even like the RBI, the 100 RBI seasons. He's tied for sixth for most of the modern era behind Pujols and Alex Rodriguez, who, by the way, was part of that collage of people saying, you know, happy 500th home run. And but it was weird seeing. But then I also just saw a commercial with Alex Rodriguez promoting man makeup, which is, you know, teach your own. That's cool. But it was really weird to see the contrast of it. And then David Ortiz was on there and he was in the Field of Dreams outfit. And it looked like
in the cornfield.
It looked like something that I think I swear to God, I thought James Earl Jones wore once.
Oh, yeah.
So sorry. I'm not swearing. God, sorry about that. Some listeners who are sensitive to that. So I apologize. But anyways, he just looked like James Earl Jones in that picture. In the video. All you need was the glasses. It would have been perfect. So
Terrence Mann.
Yeah, and that was one of those characters too that I don't know, that movie, everybody loves that movie and it's a good movie. I
didn't think about the sort of magic Negro aspect of about it until our guest the other week brought it up. I'm like, oh shoot. Patrick, yeah, it's true. Patty. I was like, ah, that's a bummer. But I still, I don't know. Whatever. I like that movie. There's people on sides, people who treat it like it's the greatest movie of all time, and other people who get upset about that and point out all its flaws. And to me, it's just like, you know, it's just a dumb baseball movie with fantasy elements that's good to watch. I don't like, it doesn't need to be anything more than that. I don't watch Jurassic Park and like, you know, get upset about the Raptors not being realistic. Like, you know what? That's actually a Utah Raptor. It's not a Velociraptor or something. I don't care. They're Raptors. They're, you know, they want to open doors and eat people. I'm good with that.
Yeah. Not to mention how these people, why does Jeff Goldblum have his shirt open? You know, the science is be that, you know, he's using the wrong vernacular.
Because he's Jeff Goldblum and he's a sexy, sexy man with good quotes and whatever. Movies. Like these aren't, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. But anyway,
we're losing the thread here. No, you're losing the thread. We're getting back on the schedule. So this week, what the Tigers minor league schedule looks like, the Blue Jays of Dunedin will be coming into town for 6 games. The first time, Lakeland. Hopefully we go to a Toledo game because St. Paul's coming to town and I've never seen the Saints play. So I thought it'd be maybe cool. We could check that out.
I'd love to do it.
So that's going on.
Guess where area is.
Yep. Oh, I was going to say, go ahead, Chris.
Oh, there's a home run for Drew Ward. Snagglepuss even.
I remember when we had the Baltimore Lockdown Orioles guy. He was talking about how cool that guy is. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm just talking smack about his voice. But he seems like a normal dude. But there you go.
And there you go. And then West Michigan at Lansing. So we'll be making our way up there and seeing Jesse. And hopefully Dan will run them. But again, check out the Road to Detroit podcast. They do a really good job with some of the player interviews. I can't, very good source of information for catching up on the minor leagues as they kind of give you the interviews. We can kind of hopefully give you the deeper dive stuff. So we'll be back on Thursday with just recapping the St. Louis series before the Tigers take on Toronto on the weekend. It's a home series starting on Friday and it's already gonna be Labor Day weekend next week. Holy crap.
I know. I'm about to turn 41.
Man? That's right. I'll be behind you turning the magical 4-0 in October.
Uh-oh. Bring some Mickeys over.
Pour one out.
Some bottle of Mickeys.
Bottle of Mickeys. So, but thanks for everybody who's listening. Michael Meyer, thank you for your assistance. Thanks for the questions and thank you for the
assistance. I guess they weren't questions. They were assistance. They were answers.
You know what? Michael Meyer was our executive producer this evening. So, I'll give him producer credits. So, if you're still watching, you get the producer credits for that. So, That being said, thanks so much for listening or watching if you're watching YouTube, and thanks so much for listening to the podcast. Thanks for listening to the podcast. And on that note, on that random drop note, we'll see you next time.